Yeah, I grew up in Baltimore, and when I was a kid, all I wanted to do was take Brooks Robinson's job and be the third baseman for the Baltimore Orioles when I grew up. And I grew up in a nice upper-middle-class area, had two parents, you know, went to school, education was drilled into us, and did the normal things that kids do growing up, you know, caught fireflies and played little league ball and started a band and dated girls and, you know, all that stuff. And at the age of 14, I thought I would, I wanted to get drunk. So I went to the neighborhood supermarket, the A&P, which is no longer there, and I stole a bottle of blackberry brandy, and I proceeded to drink it all, passed out, threw up, got discovered, passed out, blacked out in the median strip on Roland Avenue, which was the street I lived on, by my sister and her friend, Sophie, and I tried to kiss Sophie. And so, anyway, you know, my first experience with a mood or mind-altering substance was I stole it, I did it alone, I threw up, I blacked out, I had bad, you know, repercussions, and I got punished. And I couldn't wait to do it again. And I continued on, and I went to college, and I continued my drug use, my alcohol and drug use, and I went to college, and in college I took heroin for the first time and fell in love with heroin, and nothing else mattered. And so what happened to me was I became addicted to drugs, and I went on this downward spiral for 27 years. And it led me to a place that in 1990, my father, who had polio, and because he didn't have the use of his legs for quite some time and was bedridden and in a wheelchair, he developed clots in his legs and infections and things of that nature. And he was taken to the hospital and was given a choice of either having both of his legs amputated above the knees or to die within 6 days. And his choice was not to go through with the operation. He said, I've lived long enough, I've spent a lot of years walking on canes and in a wheelchair, and I just don't want to live the rest of my life like that. So that was obviously a hard decision for us as a family to accept, but it was his decision. And my brother and my sister were there. My brother flew in from Los Angeles. And so what we decided to do as the three siblings was to take eight-hour shifts and stay with my dad around the clock for the next 6 days until he died. And I volunteered to take the first shift, which was at nighttime. At the end of my shift, I took my father's checkbook out of his coat pocket. I went home. And over the next 6 days, I forged checks in his name, and I emptied out his bank account. And I spent those 6 days taking drugs because drugs to me were more important than seeing my father alive. And I never saw my father alive again. When it came time for my shift to be there or come, I would make excuses and stories and tell my brothers and sisters, oh, I left a half an hour early, I got there an hour late, you know, I was there, whatever. that's where the disease of addiction can take you. After that time, I got sent to prison. I spent 3 years in prison, and I got out of prison and started doing what got me into prison again. And I went into a detox facility by my parole officer. It wasn't anything I wanted to do. I was taken from Baltimore to Montgomery County to go to detox. I was taken in handcuffs. So what that tells probably everybody here is, I don't know, I've never been taken anywhere I wanted to go in handcuffs, you know. That's if you want to take me to dinner, you don't have to cuff me up. I'll gladly go. I did not want to go there, but I went there and went into detox, went into treatment, got clean and sober. 13 years later, my mom was diagnosed with congestive heart failure and kidney failure and liver failure. And she had been battling illnesses for a long time. And she was in the hospital. And I was there with her and my family. And this time, I didn't go anywhere. This time I was able to sit there with my mom and look at her and tell her that Scott is okay, that you don't have to worry about me, that she had seen me clean and sober for 13 years. She had seen the changes in me. She had seen me, you know, get married, have a stepson, raise a family, go through the trials and tribulations that life brings you. And I didn't have to get high over the good things and the bad things, you know, because it's not the bad things that drive people to get high. It can be success too, you know, because I'm not used to having success. But she was able to see by my life and by my actions that I had changed. And I was with my mom when she drew her last breath. And I told her that, you know, everything will be okay. Everything's okay. You don't have to worry about me, Mom. It's, you know, you can go. I'm good, you know. I'm good, you know. God be with you. And she drew her last breath. And you know, that's been 3 years ago, 4 years ago. And so when those hard days come, and I think to myself, you know, that maybe I can go get high and forget whatever problem I'm going through, because I've had a lot of trials and tribulations in this journey of recovery I've been on, that I could just, like, get high and forget about everything. I think back to, like, which person do I want to be? You know, those aren't two separate people that did those actions. Both of those people reside inside of me. And, you know, on days like today, when it's a beautiful spring day, you know, I still think after 18 years clean and sober, man, today would be a nice day to get high. But then my next thought is, today's a better day not to get high. And I'll never be the third baseman for the Baltimore Orioles. But I do play on a 50 and over softball team, and I play third base, and I wear Brooks Robinson's number 5. Thanks.